In this episode, I sit down with David Gay of the Davidson Martin team in New York City. We met because he was published in the New York Times in spite of being a brand new agent with just 3 years of experience. Stay tuned because his adventure is a pretty wild ride. As always, I'm your host in San Francisco Connection, Sean Kunkler. David, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so I'm super stoked to unpack how you have managed to get nearly a dozen leads from one New York Times article, which is incredible. But before we get there, you've only been in the business for 3 years, which is a super cool feat to have accomplished in obviously a very short period of time. But I want to talk about the article, but before we do, I'd really love to just hear a little bit more about that transition. Like, what was your inspiration to even entertain the idea of getting into real estate to start with?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy when you put it into perspective, 3 years. And, you know, 3 years is a long time, but in the span of one's lifetime, it really isn't. So yeah, hearing that out loud is kind of crazy, you know. The past 3 years have been exhilarating. You know, I've fallen down, I've picked myself up, but I think most everything that has sort of gotten to me to sort of where I am in this moment and the times, and especially real estate, is my my career in theater.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. I've been in theater since, I don't know, 7 years old. I started in community theater and children's theater. And, you know, going back to those days, it was just sort of my parents trying to find a hobby to make use of my time, something that I'd enjoy. I tried a few sports that didn't work out so well. My mom put me in tap class and off I went. And it was there that I sort of really found the meaning of collaboration, working on it as a team to put something up and to sort of let my ego go for like the benefit of the ensemble. I mean, that's really what theater is all about. So I feel like from a very young age, just like someone who, you know, gets into sports, that sort of team environment, I was not only in a team environment, but a very creative one where I was able to sort of just be myself freely in many different assets. So
I'm very familiar, obviously, with sports and being an athlete in my younger years. And I've never drawn that connection between the two, between theater and sports, but it absolutely makes sense. It's like a different, you're still performing. So there's still a game day, if you will. And there's still the practice and the leading. It totally makes sense. Were you primarily into the dance side, or did you get more into the acting side, or what was your niche within it all?
So I guess I did start in dance with tap and some jazz classes, and then, you know, went into sort of the children's theater. It was like a weekend thing, and then they had summer programs. And then, you know, in my county, I'm originally from St. Petersburg, Florida. There's a very big sort of arts presence there, and there was an arts magnet high school, well, elementary, middle, and high school. And so, you know, being in the children's summer theater program, you're meeting, you know, kids all the way through high school. So I sort of saw that trajectory and told my parents, hey, I think this is something I want to pursue. So you have to audition, which is kind of crazy, auditioning, you know, when you're, I don't know, 9 years old, you know, to get into elementary. I didn't go to the elementary or middle, but I did end up going to the high school. And I think that's sort of where my life really just took a turn for, like, I know it sounds crazy, but greatness. I met my best friends. I learned so many things about myself. I was in an environment, you know, I don't know if I knew it at the time, but as a gay man, to sort of explore, you know, what I could be, my full sort of potential. And yeah, so I started in high school, and then they sort of prep you for the college programs. This was around 2008, you know, YouTube was sort of just getting around, you know, theater was definitely a thing, but these sort of BFA programs were really becoming present in our country. And I auditioned. I was a little nervous about going to school outside of the state, so I ended up going in-state at the University of Tampa. And I actually was also nervous about pursuing a full-time sort of career in theater. So I picked up a double major in marketing and minor in communications. So I felt that I would have sort of a well-rounded degree, should I choose to do theater or not. And yeah, I think that sort of also paved a way of success for when I got to the city and I was auditioning and also sort of wondering what else, you know, could I do if acting wasn't a full-time thing.
That is a fascinating trajectory. And I can totally see from auditioning to going and listening presentations, the parallels of the skills that you learned from the arts and how they translate over into real estate, because you're not going to get everything that you audition for. So you have to be very comfortable with perceived failure, right? You just weren't the right fit for that thing. And that's probably the hardest thing to learn in sales or real estate, of you're probably not going to be right for every single client. So you're not going to get everything that you attempt, but that's part of it. So it's really interesting. I've never sat back and heard, like, had this conversation before. So it's fascinating to hear the parallels.
There's everything, you know. I think back to, I mean, we'll get into sort of like how I feel like I am in this position today in my time in New York City, but I feel like looking back on acting school and they're taking these improv classes and, you know, team building through like scene work, and it's really, I mean, you're one-on-one connecting with another human being. And at the core of it, I feel like that's what real estate is: connecting, relationships, networking, all of those things I learned, you know, training to be an actor and then coming to literally like the mecca of American theater, like New York City, to then audition and make a career of it for like a decade of my life. I mean, I truly feel theater and all of those rejections and gigs and contracts set me up to be the best realtor I think I could be.
100%. I can see that. I mean, with all of us, most people, I should say, coming into real estate, it wasn't their first career. They've had something else. And it's always like serendipitous, those skills that you've learned, whatever they may be, and how they parlay into this new industry for us. So I actually grew up in Connecticut, and I do know New York is the place for theater. My dad used to take me into the city and we'd go and watch a play and hang out for the day. And I've always loved, obviously the Broadway shows are super fun, but the off Broadway, those little cuddy hidden away gems just in the neighborhoods, those are just, it's just such a cool place, cool environment to be a part of.
You know, a large part of our country, you know, Broadway's in one central location, and then you have Chicago and LA, of course. But all of these regional theaters, that's what's keeping, you know, theater alive across the country for audiences who can't make it to New York City. You know, I was down in Florida, so regional theater was like a big part of my life growing up in community theater. And we had the big touring houses that, you know, Wicked or Hamilton comes through. But yeah, I envy you for living so close to the city, because I can only imagine what that would have been like.
New York in the 80s was definitely not New York now. It was a very different New York.
There was some good theater in the 80s, but yeah.
I was young. I mean, I definitely remember seeing some of the more popular stuff, but it was different. It was definitely a grittier time in the city. But did you get into, I'm just curious, this is more of my curiosity and as it relates to sales, but did you get into any of the improv or doing things of that nature?
So I never got into like UCB, I think it is, that Upright Citizens Brigade. That's where a lot of SNL sort of people come out of. I never did a formal class there. I did some like one-off acting classes in more like private settings. And then in school we had improv classes, but yeah, a lot of actors do go into, and not even actors. I feel like, you know, people who have to speak in like in big corporate jobs or even some real estate agents might take an improv class just to sort of learn that sort of like quick connection and thinking on your feet. I mean, we do it every day in real estate, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I mean, not for nothing, but we even call what we have our scripts, which scripts are scripts, right? And you have to read just words on a paper, but make them come alive and give them your character, your voice, your spin on it. It's funny, even with my team, I'm like, read the script a handful of times, put it down, don't look at it, try to internalize it, and then like be it. Like, be, you can't just like say these things as if they were scripted. You're going to just sound like a bad actor. So it's fascinating, again, this conversation, because all of those components, I can absolutely see how they fed and benefited you as you turned a corner to get into real estate. So kind of let's rewind to that moment as you decided to get into real estate. What was that defining moment of when you got into it? Because our imaginations are often different than reality. Did you have kind of one of those like, oh, this isn't what I expected, but it's either better or worse or different than what I had imagined?
You know, there's something about theater. There's that underlying sort of competitive nature. I think that pushed me to go to the arts high school and then pushed me to go to major in college in theater. And then from there, pushed me to move to New York City. That was the place I, you know, needed to be. That's where everyone went. And, you know, my parents didn't, I don't come from a wealthy family. My parents did not help me out really. I think we moved up there. They took me to IKEA, bought me some furniture items, and I moved into a sublet I found off Craigslist. And none of those people in the sublet were in theater. So they were fascinated, you know, following my early steps in the city. But yeah, I got to the city, auditioned a ton. And right off the bat, I booked some regional gigs that turned into some national tours, that turned into some off-Broadway gigs. And then a cruise line where I met my husband, Disney Cruise Line. I think this is the craziest story, Prince Charming and Prince Philip. You can't make this up. But being on that cruise line, I was able to sort of, you know, save up some money. And, you know, that was sort of, I don't know, 2016. And then we got back to the city and I was just like, are we supposed to do one thing our entire life? You know, I've been doing this for so long. I was a child doing this, you know, what else is there? And yeah, I think one day I was just thinking about my future and I said, wait a minute, I got a double major in marketing. Let's see what we can do with that. So I got into a big Broadway producer's marketing agency as like an assistant, faked my way through that for 6 months. After a month, I think I was like crying every other day after work, you know, it was just not it, right? I was in the industry, I was using this other degree and I felt close to something, but I was just like, I don't know about this. So then I got out and did a couple more gigs and I was doing one gig. I look back on it now as maybe one of the best gigs of my career. It was a chorus line with Mitzi Hamilton. She was the original tits and ass in the line from the documentary. There were a bunch of Broadway people. It was down in Florida, though. It was a regional gig, so they brought all this New York talent down. And that was January 2020. So COVID hits in March. We got the rehearsals, three shows in, COVID hits. Luckily, we were down in Florida, so I just, you know, popped over to St. Petersburg, where I spent most of COVID with my parents, and I was like, I gotta do something. I always thought about real estate. My best friend's husband, he's down at Compass, Tampa, Florida, was on this high-volume rentals team on the Upper East Side, and we were messaging one day, and he said, hey, my team's looking for a marketing assistant. So I said, oh, really? You know, I did some work at that producer's marketing agency. I have a degree in it. I've always wanted to sort of dabble in real estate. It was with Compass. I didn't really know the brokerages though at the time, but I was working part-time, I remember, at Lululemon on 75th and Broadway. And across the street, I saw these big signs, Compass. And I even Googled, like, what is Compass one day? This was, you know, before COVID. And knowing that it was a real estate brokerage, I was like, this is a great place, you know, so let me give it a shot. So I got an interview with the team lead and he hired me on the spot and I got in. I was doing some social media, you know, processing deals, mailers, brochures, showing sheets, kind of in my sleep, right? And the Compass platform makes it incredibly easy, especially for someone who's sort of well-versed in it already. And I remember sitting in the office, like the cubicle one day, and I was like looking around at these agents, junior agents and the team lead. And I was just thinking to myself, like, I can do this 10 times better. And I know that might sound egotistical, But coming from the theater background where you're in an audition room and you're dancing next to 20 other guys and you're like, okay, I'm top five in this room, you know, I think I can get this gig. I was in the audition room in this cubicle in a job that was fine, serving and working at Lululemon, but I was like, I can do this. So I got my license. You can literally get it in 2 weeks, as you know. And, you know, my team lead put me on a couple exclusive buildings of his, and the rest is history.
I love the attitude, by the way, of looking around being like, I can do this. Because that is a competitive, athletic attitude. Like, you can't walk into a room, especially auditioning or competing or whatever it is, and being like, well, I'm the worst one here. Like, you're just going to get mopped up. And so you have to have that. You have to.
But in an honest way, you know, you got to, you know, know what you have to bring to the table. Maybe they don't know it at the time, but they're going to know in a month, you know?
Yeah. You got to gaslight yourself, right? Fake it till you make it and just be like, I can do this. So I genuinely appreciate that mindset going into it.
Sean, going back to what you asked me, you know, what is one piece of advice? Something else just came to mind. My motto for my career in real estate is fake it till you make it. And thank gosh for that acting degree. I mean, I'm honest, you know, 99% of the time, but that fake it till you make it, I mean, it got me through. I think I did 7 deals in my first year.
Amazing. Good job.
Aside from, you know, managing, I think it was managing at most like 15 exclusive rental properties at the time. You know, it grew from 1 to 2 buildings, and then, you know, he saw my workload and what I could handle and trusted me. And yeah.
And so for some people who aren't familiar, New York, obviously they use, there's a lot of leasing opportunities, and more often than not, people will use agents to help them find properties. So though of those 7, were they leasing opportunities or were they actually like on the purchase side or sales side?
The Wilder team is where I started, out of the Upper East Side. Joe Wilder sort of built this team and a huge business now out of connections with landlords across the city. Mm. So he manages a portfolio of, I think, I don't even know, 50 plus buildings all across Manhattan. And these buildings range from 20 units to 100 plus units, rental buildings. And so I started off, you know, on some smaller ones, working sort of directly with the landlords, showing them, I get a showing fee, drafting the leases and really moving people in. So yeah, I feel like when you're sort of working with these buildings, you're kind of a property manager in a way, even though some have property managers, but also sort of, you know, the showing agent and of course the exclusive agent. But yeah, I started on this rentals team, and that's sort of where I made my money. You know, people are constantly moving in the city. A lot of people are renting. A lot of people can't afford to purchase. But from those rentals, and now I'm especially seeing those relationships I built, people are going to buy one day and people are going to move again. So yeah, it was a tough start, you know, running around the city, but I was used to running around as an actor, running from audition to audition and sweating and public transportation, all of that. Yeah. You know how it goes. You're in a suit, it's summer, you're trying to look good, you know.
Yeah, and the hard part here, we have cars. So it's like you're circling around, you're trying to find parking, you're double parking, and it takes more time to take off your jacket and put it back on, so you just keep it on and you're just like pouring sweat. So I feel you, man.
I'm watching Selling Sunset and it's like they're walking out of their like Bentleys, like out of their air conditioning, into their air conditioning. It's like, can we get a true nitty gritty, like selling the city, but like really selling it?
Yeah, of like us like huddled in a corner, just scoffing food down in between showings and like pouring sweat.
Even the top dollar agents are doing it. They may say that they're not, but they're riding their city bike to that $10 million penthouse.
There's definitely a level of attitude, which it sounds like you have, is you just have to adopt the attitude, whatever it takes, like whatever it takes. And I do also appreciate you having the long game in mind of, sure, I'm going to help these people get into a lease now, but if I stay in relationship with them, eventually they may lease up or they may buy. And then once they buy, they're obviously going to sell. And with condos in the city, in our city, I think the national average is people live in their homes for 14 years. In San Francisco, in condos, it's 3 years. And so if you help somebody purchase a home and you did an amazing job and you stay in flow with them, so they know you, they remember you, you've maintained to be being helpful, they call you again. And so it's like this self-generating wheel.
That was the time that sort of Compass was really starting to build this technology. I think this is what, 2020, getting into 2021, you know, and their CRM. I mean, from the get-go, the CRM was pretty great. And I'm learning all of this for the first time. I'm not coming from another brokerage. So they're busting out this new technology. And as a millennial who's pretty tech savvy, I'm just immediately picking it up. So all these leads, I'm going into my CRM, putting their lease start date, end date, their birthdays, you know what I mean? Tagging them. We have the option to tag if they're a renter, you know, if you think that they could possibly buy. And then I'm sending out those newsletters, reaching out. Oh, I see your lease is up. Or, oh, happy birthday. Oh, thanks for reaching out. Oh, by the way, my friend's looking to yada yada. Or, hey, our lease is ending. We're thinking about purchasing. So, I mean, yeah, the CRM definitely sort of helped catapult me too. So that's another piece of advice. Find an organizational tool to sort of help you remain, you know, present.
I could not agree more. I mean, there's absolutely zero way you're going to remember everybody's birthday or anniversary date of leasing or when their lease is up or when they purchased. You're just not. There's no zero way to retain all of that information and execute on it. And if you do put it into a CRM, I feel preachy and I'm sorry if somebody's listening, but it's so incredibly important. And it doesn't matter what CRM or way you're organizing it, you just have to have it. Because it enables you to, well, once it's in there, you can take it off your plate.
Exactly. And I will say, I know you said preaching to the choir. It is tough. I think I literally spent 1 to 2 weeks of literally like processing contact information. Because think about it. If I'm managing 15 buildings and these are in hotspot locations, the units I was renting would rent after like a showing or two.
Yeah.
I'm getting hundreds of leads on a unit. So like I couldn't even keep up at times and I really had to sit and focus. But yes, to your point, once it's all in there, the platform sort of just works for yourself. And whether you're a Compass or another broker, you know, the brokerage, there's so many different CRM tools that you can sort of utilize. And
yeah, there's free ones. There's stuff on your phone. They're all over. But to your point, there's a maintenance component and you just have to do the maintenance. Like you have to schedule that in and make it, you have to, it's like going to the gym. You just have to do the maintenance things to just kind of keep status quo. And that's the nature of the beast.
Exactly.
Have you looked in the mirror yet? Let me ask you this. Did you have that moment where you're like, I'm a realtor? Like when it clicked and you felt it? Or do you still kind of feel like you're just working really hard and you're not sure how you identify?
Man, you're really making me think. There's lots of thoughts going on in my mind, but I remember the first rental I did. It was this like building in Lenox Hill. There were maybe 10 units. It was a fifth floor walk up and I was showing and showing. And finally this girl was like, I'm going to take it. And I was like, great. What do I do? So I call my team lead. I'm out on the street. She's right there. She wants to apply. I'm calling her. She's trying to negotiate with me. I'm putting on the acting, the improv skills. Like, yeah. Talking to my team lead. Yeah. We got her in. I was flying by the seat of my pants. But I was like, wow, I think I can do this. And then you get in like 10 deals and you're like, just sort of ebb and flowing. I wasn't even thinking about sales, right? But then rentals, and I'm on a team and the splits, and you know, I was getting a showing fee. So it was maybe like 25% of the rental, which wasn't a lot, but they add up, you know, I had a lot of buildings. So then I I think I posted something on Instagram and I was like, I can help you buy, sell. I was like, I want to maybe like dabble in sales. A few of my friends reached out. One of them, I met randomly on a beach in like 2016 and we just hit it off. And he's like, you know, one of my best friends now. He reached out and was like, hey, I'm his mom owned a couple of investment properties upstate. So he sort of grew around in, you know, investments and managing properties. And he was like, I think I want to purchase my first property in the city. And I was like, great. I was like, let me set you up with a collection. So collections, for anyone who doesn't know, is this tool within the Compass platform. It sort of just populates listings based on your preferences, and it's all syndicated directly through our like MLS. And so everything's updating in real time, but in a very user-friendly way, as some other dominating platforms in Manhattan are a little tricky. Anywho, I set him up in collections, and he loved it. You know, he's my age. It was a super cool high-tech thing. And we found five places to go look at in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I had never been to Bushwick. I didn't know, but he had lived in Brooklyn prior. So I was maybe faking a little with him. But also, I'm sure he knew that I didn't have much experience in Brooklyn. But he was my good friend. And, you know, he was like, I'm gonna help David out. We saw five places in one day. The first place we walked in, and he loved it. We went to the other four. We went back to number one. He put in an offer that day and we got it. It was a condo. So luckily for me, I didn't have to do a board package. Thank gosh. We closed in 45 days and everything sort of took off from there.
Wow.
Yeah. A condo in Brooklyn, one of those new developments right in Bushwick on Willoughby. Super cool neighborhood. Really, really good coffee shop. And yeah. And then I started to explore Brooklyn.
Nice. I like it when it just clicks. It's hard at the beginning when you're trying to cut your teeth in the business and get your identity. And yeah, I feel like in the beginning I was chasing deals outside of the area I wanted to practice, but I wanted to learn and I wanted to be useful. And so I definitely pushed myself, probably similar to you, a little bit too far. And I was like, yeah, it's not where I want to be. And I kind of like pulled the reins in.
After that first Bushwick deal, the following, I think four deals that year were all in Brooklyn. I had transacted in Manhattan. So I was Ditmas Park, downtown Brooklyn, Flatbush, Bushwick, my first year, I was like a Brooklyn. I was like, should I be moving to Brooklyn?
That's amazing. San Francisco. So we have, it's actually very similar to New York. So we have, San Francisco is basically a peninsula, but then you have North Bay, East Bay, and South Bay. And most people get priced out of the city pretty darn quick, similar to New York. And so they look at the East Bay. And so it's like the Brooklyn. So you can get a lot more house, a lot more yard space, a lot more bang for your buck, if you will. And so, similar to you, I had to be savvy in this other market just because my clients can get a one bedroom condo in one place or a two to three bedroom house with a yard just on the other side of the bridge.
It's kind of crazy. It's literally the same thing with Manhattan. You know, people say, okay, this is my budget. I want to live in Manhattan. All right, let's look at some new developments in Brooklyn because I know your taste and there are a lot of tax abatements.
Yeah. I mean, and that's sometimes you have to have hard conversations with your clients and ultimately you have to guide them to their goals in a safe way. And it's tricky. Like you have to have these nuanced conversations. And you know, the rule is some lids are screwed on a little bit tighter than others and they take a little bit more coaching and prepping and preparing, but they figure it out. So let's do some fast forwarding a little bit. So you recently helped a client purchase. So let's unpack this one. Like, I'm just going to let you run with it.
I'm on a new team now. I transitioned about 2 years ago. I felt like I sort of capped out on that high volume rentals team and I really wanted to dig my feet into sales. And I will say, you know, being a leasing agent, you know, I know it varies from region to region and like different markets, but in New York City, you really can make a life as a rental agent, especially if you have all these exclusive buildings. But you can make a whole other life if you get into sales in New York City. And I saw that whole other life, and it was a scary leap. I didn't have a ton of money. And I just was like, I'm ready for a change. So I started shopping around with some pretty big teams, and ultimately landed upon this small team with this woman, Karen Davidson, who had this sort of mentor, sort of, dare I say, motherly vibe that I just was like, I think this is where I need to be. She had an Ivy League degree. She worked on Wall Street. She was a mom of two. Her husband was a real estate attorney. And this woman, I could just see in her eyes, she was a powerhouse. And I was like, I wanna be on this team. She's a part of this program in Street Easy where it sort of feeds you leads. And there's other programs like this, I'm sure, that you can either pay for. And I mean, you do essentially pay for it. They take a portion of your money. It's called Street Easy Expert. So you get leads from different buildings that you've sold in or areas, and they basically connect you with the incoming leads rather than the listing agent. So I would connect with a lot of leads that way. But one lead, Kendra Pine, reached out on this Upper West Side condo that Karen sort of did a deal in, and I was connected with Kendra. And I believe that's how we connected, or maybe she found me via the Compass site. But either way, I believe it was through Street Easy. And she was like, hey, I'm not in the country at the time, but I'm really looking to purchase there. You know, I'm originally from the States, and I'm looking to move back after I finish my PhD here in London. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll bring you through this listing, you know, a dollar is a dollar, you know, and it was what I think a $300,000 studio. Really quick, I want to say side note, the reason why I brought up Karen Davidson and the Davidson Martin team, I feel like the most important thing she told me once I joined her team is no listing is too small, because just like that rental, they're going to buy. And just like that $300,000 studio, in 5 to 10 years, they're going to be buying a $2 million two-bedroom apartment. So I always had that sort of in the back of my mind. But at the same time, I had just joined this team. I was taking any lead I could get. So I meet Kendra for the first time at the Upper West Side condominium. You know, it's only 10% down. I think that's what sort of intrigued her. It was just really small, though. And it wasn't her vibe. And I was like, well, if you're looking for a little more space, you know, one bedroom, you can look into co-ops, but there's certain financial thresholds. And she's like, what do you mean? For anyone that doesn't know, the city's compromised of, I'd say, 80% cooperative buildings, where you're basically a shareholder in a property. You know, you're not, it's not sole ownership as you would have in a condominium, which they make up like 10%, I'd say, 20% maybe. So co-ops are the norm. And I was like, well, you know, co-ops are essentially less money, but they are more upfront. So I was looking at your finances. I feel like if you're going to want more space, let's sort of go the co-op route. But we're going to need you to get your ducks in a row, do X, Y, Z. You're going to, you know, you need to save up this amount of money, I'd say. So we viewed a few more properties, and then I was like, okay, Kendra, you know, I'm just going to keep in touch with you. You finish up your degree in London. Save your money. Don't go out to eat. Don't buy that expensive pair of heels. You know, listen to what I'm telling you. You will find your dream home in here in New York City. It's a big dream. Everyone wants to live in New York City. And, you know, I think the people who make it there, I mean, they say can make it anywhere. And so many people come to me with that dream, and I love fulfilling it, just like I'm about to with Kendra. So this was this time last year, I'd say. February 23 rolls around, and I get a note from Kendra. Hey, David, it's been a while. You know, I'm finishing up my degree here in London. I'm going to be moving back to the city, you know, after in late spring. I want to take a look at these three units. I've saved up the money. here's my bank statements, you know, like I did what you told me to do. And I said, great, let's go. So we took a look at three units. I think they're the three units actually listed in the Hunt article. And the one we ultimately ended up with was this one bed on a fifth floor walk up on the Upper East Side on 73rd and 2nd. And we ended up getting it for $318,000. Now, it says $350,000 on StreetEasy, but we ended up getting a closing credit because the co-op thought it was too low of a price, but we already sort of negotiated that $318,000. So, incredible deal for my client. But I remember walking through, we were at the open house, and I was like, I walk in, and I'm like, oh gosh, five floors. Holy cow, this is like a true one-bedroom apartment, back-facing, like this little garden. Didn't really need much work. I was like, this is Kendra's apartment. There was a mom purchasing for a son, I think, walking around there too on FaceTime, and I was like, just ignore them, you know. But yeah, got our offer in, negotiated that $318,000. And I still hadn't met Kendra, you know, and I knew I wouldn't meet her until closing day.
Wild. So to kind of give more context to people listening, all of the showings, all the tours, they were all just virtual FaceTime?
They were virtual on FaceTime. And I think, you know, everyone doesn't operate like this. And she talks about it in the article. She's like, man, that was probably a very irresponsible, like risky thing for me to do. Make one of the biggest initial investments of my life via FaceTime. But I will say, and Sean, I think you can agree, I think COVID sort of forced us to be comfortable with that.
We have, for sure. I mean, if you pre-COVID, we were not comfortable even talking to another human on this video. It took us a while. Like FaceTime was like, some people adopted it, some people didn't. But now it's just like, it's part of our normal. And so I agree. I think COVID made this other level of looking at houses and vetting an agent, it made it kind of a normal part of this weird process. I'm actually more curious about you vetting her, because San Francisco is also a mass transient city, and we get a lot of people coming in from all over the place. I can't even tell you how many scammers I get from other countries. And like, how did you filter to make sure you weren't being scammed in some weird capacity?
So Google is a great thing, and LinkedIn is a great thing too. And I feel like going back to social media, what is social media? Social media is a really great tool to sort of vet people right off the bat. So I went straight to all of those channels, you know, and I sort of was like, oh, wow, this girl is real. And I'll never forget. When I remember I spoke about that conversation we had, this is what you need to do. We were on the street and I was talking to her on FaceTime, and I could just tell, man, I'm going to make this girl's dream come true. And we had this connection that I was like, she is my client, but I really sort of foresee a great friendship, like once we do get there. And when we met in person for the first time, it was like we had known each other for years, but we were literally communicating virtually for the past year. But vetting her, I mean, yeah, I guess I just trusted my instincts, and I think it all goes back to acting class and reading energies and risk.
And to your point, I feel like the lines absolutely get blurred between my really good friends and clients and good friends. Like they just kind of, they intermingle on both sides of the line. Because we are in a unique luxury. I agree. I think no lead is too small. I'll work with everybody. However, I choose who I work with. It's not the price point that's the determining factor. Because, quick segue, I have sold or worked on really small properties, and those properties know CEOs, or they're hanging out with so-and-so, and then they make an introduction, and next thing you know, you have a $3 million client out of nowhere. And so I personally, I, I, if you treat everybody with the same level of work ethic and just being there for them and truly, truly trying to do the right thing, I think it pays off in dividends.
And he might just end up in the New York Times.
Dude, which is crazy. And so how did that happen? Like where, at what point did that article get picked up? Or did they found you, or what happened there?
Yeah. So we met, at the final walkthrough. So you do a final walkthrough, usually a day before closing. And, you know, everyone met each other for the first time. I met the listing agent, I met Kendra. And then closing happened the next day. And I sort of walked her back to her apartment and congratulated her. She was getting things delivered. And she was like, hey, this is really random, but do you read The Hunt? And I said, I don't know what that is. And she's like, well, it's a real estate column in the New York Times. And I was like, oh, cool. She was like, well, I've sort of befriended the editor, Joyce Cohen. I've been a longtime fan. And I sort of submitted our story. And she was instantly fascinated by the fact that not only was this an entirely virtual transaction, but at this price point. And she wants to sort of pick it up. Would you be down? And I thought about it for a second. And now going back to... I feel like I could get chills thinking about it. Your question, when was the moment you feel like you were a realtor? I was like standing there on the street, having done sales and all these rentals, and I'm on my new team, and I'm like literally getting asked to be in the New York Times without even paying for it or thinking, like it was being done for me. I think that was the moment where I was like, oh, I'm doing this. I'm not gonna do this, I'm doing this. So yeah. That was in May. Flash forward a couple of months, I get a call from the New York Times. We have a 2-hour conversation, and she tells me the dates. I put it in my calendar. I let my friends and family know, and it launched online on a Thursday, and then it was in print on a Sunday. On Thursday, I was getting emails from Robert Refkin, our CEO, Nada, our president, Rory, Gordon, all the head honchos at Compass, agents from across the country, including yourself. And not only that, but complete strangers from all over the world, Belgium, Spain, UK, who had this dream, the same dream that my client Kendra came to me with a year prior, and so many do. They want to live in New York City. And the possibility of that and me being that sort of person to help them achieve it, I don't know. I mean, there's really not words to explain how that felt.
Dude, that is amazing. And I love that. I when I saw it, when I came across the article, I was just like, that is amazing. Like, I was so stoked for you, and I didn't even know you. I've never met you. Like, we've never crossed paths up to that point, but I was like, that is amazing. I have to have a conversation with this person. And I'm so glad we did. And I think, on a sidebar, I feel like our community needs to do a lot more of that, of rather than like, oh, that's so-and-so, they're number one, and they'll like lie, cheat, and steal to be there. But I feel like just stepping back and applauding people when these amazing moments happen is, there's plenty to go around.
Collaborate without ego. That's one of our principles at Compass. And I try to live by that every day. And dating back to, you know, being in a show in an ensemble in a theater piece, you know, we're all working together to get to the same finish line.
And not for nothing, but there's not a single transaction you'll have by yourself in a silo. You need teams around you. You need people. And realistically, you're going to need the buyer's agent or the listing agent on the other side helping you. And so it's a very collaborative. We just don't ever know who we're going to be working with. That's the wild card, but you're going to be, it's an inevitable.
You don't even know, or even think to know. And maybe someone will like ghost you or like sideline you. And you're like, but that's where I pick myself, you know? And I think of it as a learning experience, right? If something goes wrong in a transaction, if a client goes to, you know, as long as I know I'm putting in the work and I'm doing my job to the best of the ability, it's their loss. you know, and it just sets me up for that, to give that much more to my next client.
I literally had a conversation the other day with Lindsay Nurin out of Austin, Texas, who is doing just shy of $300 million annually. Crazy numbers. And she literally talks about, essentially, I'm going to summarize, paraphrase, and kind of butcher it, but get off of the roller coaster and just live a little bit more even, and don't get too excited about the wins and don't get too excited about the losses, and just kind of keep a level head. And it's hard, but it's incredibly important to maintain your sanity through the real estate, through the trends, and through, there's a lot of chaos.
I think in any industry, people can get too wrapped up in work. And I've always tried to keep that balance. I think balance is key to living a healthy life. You know, what we do is very flexible in nature in terms of, like, you know, the common work day, or work week rather. But there's also lots of discipline because you are your own boss, you know? So going back to where we started this conversation, goal setting, you know, try to have those daily, weekly, monthly, year-long goals so you can hopefully get to $300 million in a year. That's incredible. But that's also not the limit, right? In this industry, I feel like it's almost infinite.
The beauty in this industry is you are the writer. You can write any script you want, any story you want, and it can play out any way that you want it to. And you literally are in control of all your entire destiny. And I think the interesting part within that, and I've had many conversations with a lot of other agents, is within that is just figuring out who you are and what makes you happy. If you just really genuinely love representing leasing clients, is that the right phrase? Then do a lot of that. And if you genuinely love building teams and managing them, then do that. But don't confuse yourself with, I really love selling, so I'm going to go build a team so I can manage them, because then you're not going to be selling. And I feel like that's where we all buy into these other narratives that aren't our own. And we need to just kind of step back and be like, hey, where is my joy? And how do I do a lot more of that?
I think dialing, and I've been thinking about this recently, I was like, you know, even going back to like my days as an actor, okay, what else is there? And then I did that marketing assistant at the producing company. Okay, what is my next step? And then now getting into real estate. And I was like, I feel like at the core of all of this, it's like, what is keeping me here? And I've really been thinking about this recently, and what comes to mind is like helping others. And I was like, you know, you always think about what were you maybe put on this earth to do? And I feel like through real estate, and especially this transaction with Kendra and all of these people reaching out now, but even all my past clients, renters, like purchasers, like helping others like brings me so much joy. And so like whenever I have a tough day, I like think back to like, oh, okay, this is at my core, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I know I can make a life of this. And here I am. Yeah. So finding that one thing, right? Whether you're an attorney or a doctor or a server at a restaurant, you know, we can get so caught up in all the intricacies and like the things we love about the job, the things we hate. But like, if you can find that one like core thing, it's like, oh, what does maybe bring me joy, and why was I put in this position? Why am I doing this now? I think, I don't know, that helps me sort of get through the bad days.
That's a perfect point, and probably the most ideal way to uncap this whole episode. I have nothing to add to that. I think that was just a perfect, elegant closing. So thank you, David. I sincerely appreciate your time. And I'm excited to watch your evolution in your trajectory. You are definitely on the right path. So I wish you many years of just amazing success.
Thank you so much, Sean. I just have to say, I love looking up to others and the mentors in my life, everyone who's sort of gotten me to where I am. Like I just can't express enough gratitude, and especially to you. I mean, what this Times article has done is sort of opened up all these new relationships and pathways. And your podcast, I mean, that's a feat in itself. And so seeing people like you and just honestly, everyone in this business is an inspiration. And I thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.